Don't forget to visit marketingcasts.com to find even more custom curated marketing podcasts just like this one. That's marketingcasts.com.
Hi, this is Sean Halter, host of the CMO Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and catch up on all the previous episodes at www.thecmosuite.com.
This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconex. Uconex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like The Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconex. Visit them today at uconex.com and No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. Visit them at nokidhungry.org.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. Winmo tracks every national advertiser, their agency relationships, and key executives within each organization. Get instant media spend, competitor tracking, and industry trend analysis in one easy-to-use application that integrates with all major CRM platforms. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.
Finally, the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Good morning. You are listening to the CMO Suite. I am your host, Sean Halter. And remember, the CMO Suite is presented by Connectivity Holdings. This is Stephen Moy, Chief Executive Officer for Barbarian. And, you know, we're talking about the fact that the new office has changed. You know, it used to be when we did the podcast in New York on a pretty regular basis, our guests would come up, you'd greet them, you'd hug them, you'd bring them in. It's such a personal relationship. And now we're all kind of working remotely. We all probably have a little touch of Zoom fatigue. You're trying to motivate your teams, you know, across these little square boxes. And, you know, for you having, you know, put, you know, just a little over a year in as the CEO with that group, I definitely want to try to make sure we spend some time on the show today talking about how you are going to do just that, how you're going to continue to motivate this team, depending on whether they're working from home or they're working from the office. But before we get there, let's talk a tiny bit about just about where you grew up. So where did you grow up?
Oh, yeah. I was born in Hong Kong, and my whole family migrated to the USA in the early 80s. It was I have to give all the credit to my parents that they have that vision. Of course, all parents decided, where do we find the best opportunities for the children? And for our option would be in the USA. So we migrated here when I was a teenager. And then I actually spent more time in US than being a Hong Kong Chinese.
Yeah.
Hong Kong.
Do you have brothers and sisters as well, older or younger?
Yeah, I have an older brother, the second child, and a younger brother and also a younger sister. They all live in different places.
So you came over as a teenager, went to U.S. schools, obviously, at that point. And how was that? How was that transition for you as a teenager? Was it a bit of culture shock? Were you able to kind of settle in reasonably well? Did you guys move to New York? Is that where you guys moved to, or did you move somewhere?
Right. Great question. You won't believe it, but I'm always now making fun of myself. Actually, our first stop was Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Yes. So I attended as a junior and also senior in high school. Believe it or not, me and my older brother were the only two Chinese. So talk about cultural integration, cultural shock, if you will. I remember like the educational point of view is very different compared to the British Chinese educational system in Hong Kong. I was taught already everything, like from biology, science, a lot of, I would call more technical aspect. But when I came to America, actually, I value the more on the sport, like your physical and also leadership, your free thinking. So I will imagine, can I be kind of like the first couple of years I was still adjusting. Whoa, this is very different, because we used to be, when I was in Hong Kong, I can only speak for myself, you were told to do certain things, right? But when it comes to US, even in the 80s, they get you a lot of freedom. Hey, you can pick whatever you want. So that is a good change. I totally see that good change, how not only I'm being technically trained, you know, the Asian world of the mathematics and engineering, but when also I started seeing how to become still learning how to become a better leader, you know, how to really reflect yourself, like how to be, you know, a better self. So I still learning.
Yeah. So you brought up a couple of really interesting things. If we can take just a couple of minutes to unpack on that, and then we'll jump straight into your trajectory from there. We definitely want to spend some time on your time at Sapien Nitro. But, you know, it sounds to me like you feel as if you ended up in some ways with this really great combination, you know, forward-thinking learning in Hong Kong, you know, kind of specifically laid out. But then in your last 2 years of high school, you were able to kind of think more about other dynamics other than just that piece. And again, it's probably what's helped position you in some ways to some of this meteoric growth that you had along the way. Neither side is probably completely right or completely wrong, but it's what helped shape you really as a person, I would say, you know, potentially to some extent. Why did you guys pick Milwaukee? Did you guys know somebody there, or your dad just said, let's pick a place?
It was my family. So we have a lot of, my last name Moy, we have a lot of Moys actually in Chicago. If you go to Chicago downtown, a lot of Moys just happened. My grandfather planted his root when he first moved here, like in the 60s. So you got a lot of Moy and family actually in Chicago and Milwaukee. And most of them, I'm just saying back then, most of them are in restaurant business. They are more entrepreneurial. They're running their own businesses. So that's why. But of course, toward the end, my father said, oh, the Midwest, maybe Boston's better. Actually, my uncle, my father's second brother still live in Boston, now in Newton, Massachusetts. So by the time we have to pick colleges, Boston is so, I've been a Bostonian for as many years. I don't talk about it, if you're living in New York, right? You cannot talk about your sports team, but you shouldn't, out of respect. So that's why we went to Milwaukee. And to get back to your earlier point, I feel very fortunate, and I cannot claim all the credit by design. I have the technical engineering training. Now I'm in the creative and digital agency business. But somehow the technical aspect, the appreciation of technology really helped me in my career. At least I'm just fortunate, like with all the agency that I've been involved until today.
And so it's to your point, you know, that understanding of, in some ways, you know, complex elements. You had this kind of whole piece of that was within you, and yet you also gained these leadership elements as well, which helped you navigate through it. So you talked a little bit there about your college, and then when did you end up eventually moving to New York?
Yeah, great. Yeah, because I was when I was in Boston after colleges, you know, went to Sapien Nitro. I ran the Sapien Nitro office for a few years, and it was an opportunity to move to New York City. When I decided to, you know, join ISOBAR, Dentsu ISOBAR, and that was a position for me to help them. I find it very interesting because after a long, I was a long time with Sapien, almost a decade, and then I always like to look for what's next. And when I started with ISOBAR, that was an opportunity because everybody respects Sapien still today. I mean, in many aspects, but they are kind of the intersection of business. Marketing and technology. And when I started at ISOBAR, so I moved to New York City, and part of my role is, oh, you've done Sapien Nitro. Can you look at help? I was fortunate working with the board level at ISOBAR with all the CEOs around the world. And I got to sit to the table working with them because my experience through Sapien Nitro and also my engineering background. So we were start thinking about how to pivot a creative agency to do more for their clients, meaning how not only a creative idea, how are you going to commercialize it, how are you going to execute it? And most cases, you require technology enablement, right? The technology innovation changing so fast. And since iPhone, remember, you know, not too long ago, like everything changes. So I was so fortunate, came to New York, started working at ISOBAR, but you know, you and I both, next thing you know, you're on the plane, right? Everywhere. But that was a lot of fun, like helping start thinking at that level, helping an agency to think what technology means to them, because not everybody should just do technology for technology's sake. And you have, just say, helping a lot of clients, transforming the brand. What does it mean for the brand? How you create new product and service, meaning offering for your client, and also how you going to create the talent and capability for yourself.
And your ability to be able to navigate that in some ways probably was spearheaded with your, you know, with your time at Sapient, to your point. So you were working out of that Boston office, I think back around 2011, which, you know, it's just a little under maybe 10 years ago, but in this industry, that was a lifetime ago. And as you had said, you know, there are a handful, sometimes when we're talking to CMOs, they all came out of Mondelez. You know, ultimately, there's like this club of like 40 CMOs that all seem to cross over at Mondelez for some reason. That's like this hub. And they go from there, and then they've worked at all of these different places. But it seems like Sapient, in some ways, in the digital world, has the same thing. You know, it's as if that's where you can kind of earn your stripes. And certainly back then, they were absolutely leading the way. And it sounds like what you felt like was your time there helped kind of guide you to being able to come into Isobar and be able to say, this is how this is done. Now, did you stay there, or did you end up working out of the UK for a little while?
Yeah, actually, I almost 4-year journey with Isobar, started off starting in New York with a global role, helping the agency together shape the new direction. And through, just by luck, I would say. And then once we created that narrative, right, now we have a roadmap. And then I somehow got myself into helping Isobar and then to do a merger acquisition. Because we decided, there are capabilities that we can accelerate our business vision and strategy. And Stephen, you know the narrative very well. Can you help us to identify a company? And I was fortunate, I was part of the team, and we started looking for light mind, you know, big thinkers and want to join a family that creates something bigger. So that was the time we acquired a e-commerce agency in London called eComera. And after we acquired that, and then they said, oh, who better choice? Someone have done Sapient Nitro integration. Hey, Stephen, you want to be the CEO and integrate the new agency and also Isobar in UK. It was a more creative-led agency. So I got that opportunity and then moved to UK. Interesting, the timing, right? I moved there before Brexit. So I saw the whole Brexit happen. Learned so much. Integrating company on the foreign country, Brexit. Really, really learn every day about how to become a better manager or business owner.
From a marketer's perspective, did you find through part of that journey that there either was a lag in some areas, or were all countries kind of navigating their way through that transition from what, in essence, to some extent was a mostly traditional footprint using traditional means over to a digital, you know, element as you start to lead from that area? Were you finding that Europe was as caught up as the US was? Was it behind where we were? And, you know, it seems like, you know, Asia is always interesting in the mix. To know where they've kind of fallen. So what did you feel like you experienced from your time there?
I mean, it's very interesting. I would say they all have, every market have their strength and also have their, you know, disadvantages. You know, when I moved to UK, a couple things very, very refreshing, because in the UK market, you know, top four digital maturity in the most mature market is US, China, UK and Japan, right? UK's actually one of them. Internet penetration is so high, and also everybody almost have a mobile phone. So the access to internet or digital unparalleled. And then also because of the infrastructure, now in US we talk about buy online, pick up in store, they already pioneer it. So it's a part of, you know, part of the mix already. They talk about omni-channel, O2O commerce. When I was there, that was more advanced than US, to be honest with you. And also in certain cases, on the because they have a variety of reasons, so they do cashless more advanced than us. So you, when you go to take the tube and anything, you can just use your Apple Pay and pay for it. I'm talking about a few years ago, right? And US seems slowly adopting. So in that sense, very interesting. You see that market, but and then on the flip side, US is the ultimate one of the biggest market in the world, just like China. The size is just different, right? UK, no matter how you in terms of budget, right? Even how Mondelez, those type of CPG company, it's really proportional to the market you have. So you will see, used to be when I was in US working with CPG company like that size, your budget very easily in, I'm just, you use a number for reference. Like, let's say it's in seven figures, millions, multi-million. When you go to UK, at least my experience, most of the assignment, the budget smaller, just by default. Like, for example, doing one marketing campaign, the similar type of campaign when I was a Sapien or Isobar in US, let's say cost between 1 to 2 million. In UK, mm-hmm. it's like 500K sterling. So all of a sudden, the size, you have to right size it for what
is
you
it
need.
Because it's a, is it because it's a smaller market to some extent?
Oh, it's a smaller market, the reach, the audiences, and US huge, the market, right? Look at US, New York versus Dallas, it's a completely different market in itself. But in UK, it's one country, like 80% of the GDP actually all come from London. It's very interesting, right? Everything's London and then the rest. So that
and then everything else.
Lot. Yeah, you learn a lot. Really. And also a couple of things. So talk about innovation aspect, also different. The American, now I was in UK, when you look at American, we are really vocal people. Like, we really, like, let's do it. Like, and then, of course, there's some cultural subtlety, right? Being Asian, Chinese too, like if you live in Hong Kong, Singapore, we all handle that dynamic a little bit differently. So I would say when I was in UK, I'm a loud American, can I be candid? Like, I went, oh, this guy's very vocal, like very fast moving. Not that, I'm not suggesting they're slow, just the approach is a little bit different. They will spend a lot of time in terms of getting alignment of all the stakeholders. That is art in itself. You know, that is a lot of, you know, skill. It's very skillfully done. How to mobilize people don't work for you or your peers or your partners, your colleagues. I would see a lot of elegance and also sophistication that way. But speed, like the Chinese and American, we are fast. You know, to be honest, talk about it, like Chinese even faster. Like, you know, you look at Alibaba. So you see, you appreciate both sides and how to approach it. And I just, for me, it's learning, wow, that's a different way to approach a problem. So I'm still learning, like, how to integrate different tactics, sometimes approaching different problem, different solution, and also even working with different people. Because right now, for example, Barbarian is part of a Korean holding company. When I was in Isobar, it's part of a Japanese holding company. Even being Asian holding company, they have different subtlety about approaching the problem and philosophy.
Yeah, you talked about a handful of some things there that I definitely want to try to take some time to unpack. One of which is obviously then your transition from Isobar, then you spent a little bit of time at RGA, and then you ended up at Barbarian. What you just hit on there was that there are also subtleties across Asian cultures. You talked about speed for just a second. So do you feel like what's happening now with this go, 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 go mentality that it seems like has just been embedded in many, many marketers for years and years and years, you have to be fast, fast, fast. Has COVID caused all of us to just also slow down maybe a little bit, be a little bit more reflective? Is that temporary, or do you feel like that's a potential long-term shift to some extent of maybe trying to do a little more listening and a little less fast, fast, fast? What's your perspective on that?
I think definitely we are witnessing I call it accelerated digital era. Like, really now, for example, right, we've been talking about years in US or e-commerce. Now e-commerce is the primary channel. So those I see more permanent effect in terms of, like, really now double downing on digital investment or making your digital investment work harder for you. Because right now people cannot go to, still we're softly reopening, like you cannot really go into a non-essential retail because they only can allow certain people. And so the whole shopping experience is different, right? You can, you're not doing custom, you know, product review at home, watching a TV commercial or talking to your friend via Zoom, and then you can go to the store to, you know, touch the product and experience the product. So that aspect, I see a lot of innovation, and actually I see a lot of speed.
So speed from an implementation standpoint,
yes,
because of what's going on, but maybe some thought behind, do we just speed for speed's sake? You talked about cashless a little earlier on, and you're talking now obviously about the transformation of digital. I'm sure it's an area you guys are spending a lot of time thinking about at Barbarian. I think that's definitely an area where there's so much potential acceleration. And it feels to me, and I'd be interested in your perspective, that Apple has been slow maybe in some ways in rolling out really the push for, you know, pay by phone when they own so many of these devices. And while you can do it, and it seemed like there was a little bump, it was almost like this QR code of 6 years ago where everybody's kind of rolling them out, but they didn't quite know what to do with it. And now's maybe the time for them to accelerate it. Is that cashless area via mobile an area that you feel like will just start seeing more and more adoption? Or is it that Apple has so much money and they're focused on everything else and that's just not an area of focus?
Yeah, I totally see the cashless where we have a higher adoption because first of all, safer, contactless. And also, we do have all the technology available. I remember your recent posting, right, about Apple Pay and why not people using it more. I think you will see more and more adoption. And I see a lot of brands are experimenting. You know, you're not China, right? You know, when I say China have like ecosystem is closed loop. They all integrated because that's how they set up. You're in Alibaba, where everything connected. In the world we're living in, you still have like Facebook integrating with, you know, your own ecosystem, and then you have Amazon selling your product and how you then they don't share data with you and you know how you want to do that. So I see more and more, at least my kind, very calculated, very strategic about experimenting. I call it, let's try it. Like, for example, live streaming, just use that for example, and also I'll go back to cashless. Live streaming, last year, Singles Day, Alibaba Singles Day, 7% of the revenue. $2-3 billion one day. Like live streaming is a thing in China. It was just not even a year ago. Before COVID in US, if you talk about our cultural acceptance about live streaming, using that for example, a lot of before COVID, we would say, oh, those guys are sell out, you know, I don't like people like merchandising product. Ah, after COVID, it's okay. It's okay now when you talk about brand. So I see more and more having that curiosity, the courageous from the brand, they are planning on doing it. Now, of course, like for example, I'm working with a client, we are about to launch a live streaming social commerce from start to finish, 4 months. We're launching it in 2 weeks. That's the speed.
That's fast.
That is fast.
That's fast.
But of course, if you talk to the Chinese, what they have done, like Stinko say, oh, Stephen, I can do it in 4 weeks. Of course, well, yeah, different setup. But interestingly, how one thing that we learned during the research about cashless, how they're using the phone, even a CPG brand, they don't, even in China, they may not sell directly to the customer, meaning e-commerce directly, they sell through the retail partner. How they handle O2O, online to offline, brilliant, simple. You know what they do? Like, for example, you're working with Mondelez, they say, or Haagen-Dazs, my friend Cynthia will tell you, selling Haagen-Dazs. She would do all the marketing, elevated the brand. So when they engage a brand, try to transact, what they elegantly done is you download QR code on your phone. So you still get that connection benefit. And you can go to the store, scan the QR code, talk about it like cashless. You still get the benefit. You got the data connection. And also you tie the two channels together. I haven't seen it in US doing this way, right? Using a QR code on your phone and go. Because I think could be interesting, right? It's proven in China. I think could be interesting here. So that tie back to the whole cashless. I would see more and more that type of digital exchange or currency and using proven technology or simple technology that makes sense.
And it does seem like, again, taking politics out of the conversation, the world is still fairly flat. You know, if you take out the noise of some of that, integrations that are happening, to your point, over in Asia could just as easily translate back over here. And I think ultimately, hopefully, we all do still want to be somewhat of a global economy. With some of the time we've got left here, I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you feel like brands are doing just that from your perspective of what you're spending most of your time on at Barbarian. What do you feel like you're seeing out there with either the brands that you work with or those brands that are coming to you guys and saying, you know, this is my problem? What do you feel like that problem is still today for most brands?
Yeah, I think a couple of fronts. Working with a lot of clients, we're fortunate, like Samsung also a client and many, many many different brands. And direct to consumer is one key topic everybody talking about. It's not in the context of I'm going to go compete with Amazon. It's more, as I mentioned earlier, it's how you own the dialogue between your brand and the customer, having that relationship, having interaction. During COVID, right, we all got stuck at home, right? You're having, so digital, we become, it is the norm right now, how you interact. You see a tremendous people spending more time watching content, right? Connected TV, subscription on Netflix, like 22 million addition. And then all of a sudden, even the millennial and the Gen Z started watching connected TV streaming content much more. Because before COVID, like, oh, no one watching content. Now, so all of a sudden, you see a lot of that kind of dynamic. So people start talking about, maybe this is an opportunity for me to have a direct dialogue because they may not be able to touch my product at Best Buy, for example. So you see that a lot, direct to consumer. So that thinking and also trying it. So and then the next one, you see a lot of new and old technology coming together, right? Remember 1 year ago, if you and I talk about AR, VR, would that work? Now, makes sense. All of a sudden, makes sense. AR, VR, because, well, I cannot shop at IKEA before they reopen. I do want to buy a new desk to put my big monitor when I'm working from home. How are you going to do that? So you see more and more. That's how IKEA bought the AR, VR company in a startup company, like that part of the strategic thinking. Just say, look at Lululemon. Is it Lululemon that sports brand bought Mirror? So all of a sudden, you got a sport, like a lifestyle brand, buying a digital mirror, provide lifestyle exercise. That is all of a sudden, you see more and more that kind of ecosystem thinking. So first direct to consumer, now we have ecosystem thinking.
Let me hit that for 1 second. That ecosystem thinking, just that terminology is probably a key takeaway, which is just that. If you're not thinking of full ecosystem, even as we open back up, even as we start settling back into maybe what, you know, the new normal is, or going back to the same restaurants that we used to be able to go to and getting back into an office of some extent, that ecosystem thinking probably won't go away. We've got a couple minutes left. I want to grab you for one more quick question if we can. And again, thank you so much for spending some time with us. My last question to you is just this. What do you wish you knew more about? Obviously, you're already so forward thinking on so many things, but what do you wish you knew more about?
I think one thing, I recently did a online conference with a lot of my colleagues and talk about is I'm still learning how to be a better leader. Now, especially I can only lead through a small window with a high definition camera. Lack that human interaction is something very interesting through this period of time. How you engage your people, how you motivate your people. I no longer can stand in front of doing a town hall in front of hundreds of people and try to motivate them, you know, connect them to the vision we have. So being a better leader through this digital disruption or transformation year, very interesting. And how this is the time giving me more time to reflect and ourselves, right? I constantly talk about this is diversity, inclusion, and equality. Remember, like during COVID, there's a lot of discussion. And I truly believe that diversity is the new baseline, right? Guys, you gotta have integrated team, you gotta have any aspect like that make it work, right? The creative with technologies, Chinese working with, you know, American, like, you know, that's how you create something new. So that should be the new baseline. Second would be inclusion. I want to see more. I'm practicing more. When you say inclusion, practice is start listening more. Having active listening, really have a shared voice. It's not about just having tokenization. Oh, I got a diverse team and you're done. No. It's true inclusion is listen, right? And then really making sure they all have that equal voice and you get the equality. Truly, like we have a lot of legacy or thinking. Like I recently did a talk at the drum, right? It's funny, even our taxonomy, you will say, oh, that's a little biased. We got to use this example. If you type in Chinese food on Google, nothing wrong with it. But you look at images, all fried rice and egg roll and noodle. Well, we have more food than that. And my German friend would type in German food, same thing, Google images, you know what, show up the first page, all sausages, right? So even the
sausages and sauerkraut, my friend, sausages and sauerkraut, that's all that's there. Listen, Stephen Moy, you brought up some incredible points. I think diversity is certainly a key. And again, at the time of what feels like chaos, feels like maybe we've lost some control, maybe that, in fact, is what's going to bring us all back together. Stephen Moy, Chief Executive Officer at Barbarian, I greatly, greatly appreciate you spending some time with us on the podcast. Thank you again so
Thank
much
you.
For joining us tonight.
Thank
Thanks,
you very Stephen. Much.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting. But your agency should. Uconnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnex today for a free demo. Uconnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.